And welcome back to Coast AM. We are going back with Lynn McTaggart as we talk about intention in just a moment. And welcome back to Coast, Lynn McTaggart with us. So, Lynn, we shall see soon enough if this experiment works.
Absolutely. You know, whether it works or not, one of the things that I think is really amazing about the intention experiments, and something that I've been surveying since 2008, is the effect on the participants. So no experiment is actually a failure, because what ends up happening is that my audience repeatedly seems to describe ecstatic states of oneness during the experiment. You know, people say things like, you know, that they've experienced profound breakthroughs in their sense of connection. They feel a real connection with the field. They have this really big, deep experience of oneness. They feel collected, you know, connected to the collective. And it's amazing things that go on in their lives afterward that I've been observing and categorizing and surveying, you know, where people actually get better in their lives. Their lives somehow heal. So this is the big fascination I have right now. Not even the outcome, but what's going on with the people taking part.
And I think during the biblical days, I think people like Jesus were able to tap into this the much the same way that these experiments are being conducted.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Jesus and his, you know, and the Essenes, who, you know, and he was supposedly an Essene as well before, were kind of a little mystical group of healers, used to do these kind of healing intention circles, I discovered, after I started doing them, because not only do I run the big experiments, but I run small ones where they're, you know, 8 to 12 participants. I divide my audience in a workshop into 8 to 12, and I've been doing this in-person workshops, and I've even been doing this on teleseminars. And we find that when people send intention for healing in a little group, not only the person getting the healing gets better, and we've had some amazing stories, but also the people in the group. So, for instance, we've had people, lots of people with arthritis who are really in pain, and they do this intention in the group, and they feel better. And so does the other people in the group who have, you know, arthritic pain. Or we have we had a woman with multiple sclerosis who came to one of my workshops, who was coming in, you know, with crutches one day, and the next day she was walking without her crutches. And, I'm shocked by this stuff, because I'm not a healer, and I'm not, you know, I don't have any experience doing that. I'm a writer. And I've just been an experimenter, and I've just been experimenting with that, and something really, really profound is going on with that group connection. So it's the thing that I've been really researching the most, George, and it was one other reason I wrote The Bond, because of the power. I was really fascinated by the power of the connection and the power of the group, and I used to think that all of these healings we were hearing about were, you know, with the power of intention. But I now think it's the power of connection. I think it's that, you know, people sob afterward and they talk about how I felt so supported. I felt so connected. I've never felt that before. And I think, you know, that's probably the way we're supposed to live. And we're just so unused to doing that anymore, that when we do, it feels miraculous.
Did you see where the Dalai Lama, Lynn, has said that he thinks that he will be the last Dalai Lama? He doesn't think any more are necessary. I found that to be an incredible statement.
Wow. I'm amazed at that, because I think there's room for a few more, definitely, looking at the state of the world. And he has been such a powerful, powerful influence. But yeah, that's very interesting. Why did he say he didn't think that there were we needed any more?
I think basically he believes that, we've come to a different threshold and he's just not necessary anymore. Maybe he's trying to appease China. I don't know.
Interesting. Very interesting. Well, there's a definite shift going on, that's for sure. And, you know, as I say, I see it with so much coming out, so much corruption being revealed now. There's just so much corruption being revealed. There's so much where people are really saying, I don't want this anymore. I mean, I'm over here in the UK, in Europe, so I was astonished to see, I don't know if your listeners know about this, but the European Union, you know, is like a super government in England, in Europe, and all the member states vote and have members of parliament, the European Parliament, too. And in the last election, all across Europe, there were minority parties that got in as the majority over, you know, independent party getting more votes than the Democrats and the Republicans, because they all voted, people voted, no, I don't want the typical bloated, you know, corrupt politicians. I want somebody new, and I'm sick of Europe. And it was really interesting for that. They, you know, it was a real protest vote. And you see it, you know, in the Arab countries now. People are really waking up and starting to say, no more. We want to live in a different way.
Let's take some calls here for you. We'll go next to John in Enid, Oklahoma. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Linda, I'm glad to hear that you're an advocate of the use of vitamin C for curing various diseases and conditions we have. 1975, I cured periodontal disease that I had after going to a dentist and learning that I had a serious case of it with 16 decayed pockets in my jaw bones, both upper and lower, wow. Mostly lower. Wow. And so he x-rayed my entire mouth. He sectioned it out to five different areas he was going to work on over a period of one area per month. And the first one he did was the lower four and in the front, in which he basically took his little pick and scoop and went in there and dug out all the decayed jawbone around the roots of the teeth. And then the second month he did another one on the bottom. And by the third month, I'm sorry, by the second, or I guess it would be the third, second month, wouldn't it, 60 days, he said, look, something's going on here that I don't understand. I'm going to re-x-ray your mouth. And he did, and he learned that from the x-rays, comparing the original x-rays to the x-rays 60 days later, that all of the pockets had either disappeared or shrunk in half.
Wow.
The larger ones were reduced by half. The smaller ones had completely gone away, cured themselves. And
wow.
The reason for that is because, and something you got to worry about, if you use a pick and scoop conventional dentist method, the jawbone never heals itself. It always remains a vacant cavity around the root of your teeth, which only accelerates the destruction of that tooth, because it'll impact with even more food, which then rots, which then, you know, destroys the root of your tooth.
Wow. How did you take, what kind of vitamin C did you take? And
well, I took a conventional type vitamin C. I got at a health food store, one of the better ones.
Was it buffer?
And I started off with 5,000 milligrams daily.
Mm-hmm.
And my urine was running clear, and I did 10,000. I doubled it, and it was still running clear. 15,000, it was running clear. When I hit 20,000, it was starting to show a good, strong yellow coloration, indicating that I was using up all but some of the vitamin C, which was passing completely through my system at 20,000 units.
Mm-hmm. You were lucky, mm-hmm. John, you didn't get a kidney stone with that much vitamin C. That's possible, Lynn. You know that?
It is. And what you need to do is not, instead of taking sodium ascorbate, take things like magnesium ascorbate or liposomal vitamin C, which is vitamin C encased in fat. And it bypasses digestive system, goes straight into the liver. So you can take lower dosages, but they're more effective. But that's fascinating to hear about healing periodontal disease. I've read so much research about vitamin C curing all kinds of so-called incurables, even things like polio and encephalitis.
Well, it's great for your vascular system too, isn't it?
It's just this great all-purpose vitamin. And as I say, we shouldn't even call it a vitamin. It's a cell recommunicator.
Let's go next to Thomas in La Jolla, California. Thomas, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Thank you, George, for taking my call. And I have a quick comment and a question for Ms. McTaggart. I am blind, and I work with a local San Diego group here that lovely men, lovely women who are blind, visually impaired. And we spoke recently about conducting intention experiments. And obviously, we can't read scripts. So my question is, do you have available in audio form your lectures, guided meditations, etc., that we could listen to in audio form and then go forward and facilitate intention experiments among our group of visually impaired, blind, etc.? And I wanted to say, before I became blind, one of the last books I read before I became blind was The Field. Magnificent.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm so pleased to hear this. First of all, yes, all of my last three books are all in audiobooks. In fact, I just provided a reading of The Field myself. So if you ever want to have it in audio form, I've read it. So you can get hold of that. The intention experiment is also in an audio form, and it's got a whole powering up program that demonstrates the best way to do intention based on a lot of research I did with all the intention masters. And finally, I have, if I may tell you, a whole intention master class on my Lynn McTaggart site. So it's lynnmctaggart.com. You can download a whole six-part teleseminar that is all about intention mastery, and it talks about how to use it. And even you can follow my whole discussion and follow my lead in running these small intention groups.
Fantastic. Thank you. I will go in on your website. Now, this is like an audio file that you can download?
Yeah, it's an audio file you can download. The Intention Masterclass, there's one that's 2014.
Fantastic. LynnMctaggart.com. Now, how do you spell your first name?
It's L-Y-N-N-E.
Okay.
L-Y-N-N-E.
Okay.
And McTaggart is A-R-T.
Okay, M-C-T-A-G-G-A-R-T?
That's it.
Just go to coasttocoastam.com. We got a link for you. It takes you right to Lynn's website. Makes it easy for everybody.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Kelly in Tucson, Arizona. Go ahead, Kelly. It's your turn.
Hey, Linda. Hey, George. What's going on?
Good.
Hey.
I had a question for you. Have you ever had to reverse an intention, or has there ever been any consequences from an intention that you've done? Like if you, I noticed that the first two or three that you did had really bizarre consequences with the people in Washington acting nuts and the people in Syria going crazy. But tonight you did one with rain in L.A., and I was wondering if you've ever had to reverse one, because, like, there's a little boy lost and there's dogs looking for him and stuff. So I was wondering, have you ever had to reverse one?
What do you mean by a reversal, a reverse one?
Well,
you mean a negative intention?
No,
can you
stop an intention?
Can you reverse an
intention? I've never tried to do that. Just think about this logically. If you send out an intention, you're sending out a thought form to have something occur. If you send out a reverse intention, you're saying a new thought form that has a new intended consequence. So I would have thought that may also have an effect, that sort of is the more up-to-date intention in a sense. But I've never, that's only my supposition. I've never actually tested that. I certainly know there's a lot of negative intention. There's a lot of evidence for negative intention. It works just as well as positive intention.
Well, it sure does. Lynn, when you started doing this years and years ago, what got you into it?
Well, it's curious, you know, curiosity, George. I make a living from my own enthusiasms. I was just fascinated because when I finished the field, I had a lot of unanswered questions. And I kept thinking about, well, all of this implication from all the evidence I'd gathered that thoughts can affect reality. But I wasn't interested in the law of attraction type stuff where it's, you know, manifesting a new car or whatever. I wanted to see if we could use it for in some big philanthropic way, and because I was really interested in the power of the group. And I was interested in a lot of the, you know, the TM studies, the transcendental meditation studies, showing that when there's a certain critical mass of meditators in an area, the crime rate goes down. So I kept thinking, well, what if you actually sent an intention for that area? Would that make it work even more? And so I think those curiosities got me into it. And my husband, you know, I kept looking for data on this. And my husband kept saying to me, well, why don't you do this experiment yourself? And that sounded really ridiculous to me because I'm not a scientist. You know, I'm just an author. But I kept thinking, well, I know a lot of scientists from the field, and I've got all of these readers in these 30 countries around the world. So if I put them together, I'll have the biggest laboratory, you know, I'll have the biggest online global laboratory in the world. And so that's really what's been going on. We've had participants from 90 countries around the world. We've done big experiments with the, you know, 9/11's coming up again, the anniversary. And on the 10th anniversary of 9/11, we did a big experiment with thousands of Arabs and Westerners joining hands to send intention to lower violence in southern Afghanistan. And like the others, and like the one we did with you, we had this powerful lowering of violence in those two provinces. So one thing I want to make clear about the experiment that we've just done about Los Angeles, you know, we'll know, the proof will be in the pudding if it starts raining. But when I do the kinds of experiments like with Afghanistan or whatever, I do them with a team of scientists. They do them looking at a long time period. Because otherwise, people can say, hey, that's just coincidence. And even when you do one of these experiments, it could be just coincidence. But if you keep doing it, then it becomes, you know, you start building up information, and it becomes pretty compelling. And that was another reason to keep doing it, is to say, no, this stuff really works.
See, and I don't believe in coincidence, as you well know, Lynn.
Yes, I know, exactly. Well, I think if something that is so remote suddenly occurs, like, I mean, when we did the 2008 intention experiment for Sri Lanka, which was in the middle of the civil war then, the week we did it, and we did it over an entire week, the entire course of the war changed. The government had been losing the war then to the rebels, and they completely wrested control of the battles during that week, and then within 3 months had taken over the north again, and 6 months later that 25-year war was over. You know, did we do this? Who knows? But it seems compelling.
We're coming back with final phone calls with Lynn McTaggart on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, we're going to be talking in the first hour about Yellowstone, that caldera. And then we're going to be talking about haunted places on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back with Lynn McTaggart and your final phone calls here as we talk about intention. Of the 26 experiments that you've done, Lynn, which one in your mind has been the most successful?
Gosh, from a scientific point of view, because it was the most controlled and it couldn't be refuted. The one where we made the plants grow faster, because we ran it 6 times. We had 3 controls for each experiment. Each experiment had 3 other sets of seeds. scientists didn't know which ones we were sending intention to. We were just sending intention to the picture of the seeds. What I would do is every time I had a big talk somewhere, and the first one was in Sydney, Australia, and the seeds were sitting back in Tucson, Arizona, I asked the audience of 700 to send intention to those seeds, and I just showed them a picture. And then the scientists would plant all four sets of seeds afterward and then measure them. And I think because we ran it, we then ran a control of that each time, we actually published that data in a scientific journal. And the seed sent intention always grew higher than the controls, in one case twice as high. So I think that's a real irrefutable statement about it. One of my favorite was sending intention to purify water in Lake Biwa in Japan with Masaru Emoto and Dr. Konstantin Korotkov. And we changed the pH of the water right there in, you know,
that's
in a
amazing
live experiment. So that was cool. And we're going to be doing something just like that in Kuwait in November this year. So I'll be doing one. And what I did that last time was I coordinated it. So we were doing it live as well as doing it on the web at the same time. So we had an audience around the world being involved.
If we tried to stop wars for 1 year, do you think that would be conceivable, possible?
It's a tall order, but, you
it
know,
sure
I've everything that I've seen so far, all of the four peace intention experiments we've run are really compelling. I got the data when we did that Afghanistan one. We got the data back from NATO, and it showed that those two little provinces that we send intention to, which were the stronghold of the Taliban, it was like a little bubble where there was this huge lowering of violence and even commented on by NATO, like, what's going on here? So, you know, maybe is the answer. You know, who knows? But maybe it's something worth trying. But remember, as I said before, the thing that seems to work the most is being very specific. So having one great big nebulous, like, let's have peace forever, may not work as well as just targeting things one thing at a time.
All right, let's pick it up with some final calls here. We will go next to Dorothy in Humboldt County, California. Dorothy, go ahead.
Hi, George. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, you're welcome.
First, I just want to offer my condolences to you and your family.
Thank you.
And Lynn, that was, I have really been enjoying this show tonight. And that intention experiment was lots of fun.
Oh, wonderful. Well, you
and
know,
I'm feeling really energized.
Well, this is the thing that I find the most fascinating. I would really like to invite all of you listeners to just monitor what happens in your life over the next couple of weeks and also how you're feeling right now. I just put on during the break a little note on my Facebook page, which is facebook.com/LynnMcTaggart2011. If you have any interesting experiences that are going on, please let me know about them because, as I say, I'm collecting these. And I find that people talk about their relationships improving, their health improving, their lives improving. So I'd love to hear about it. So how are you feeling now?
Oh, I'm feeling great.
Oh, wonderful. Fantastic.
Like I said, I came out of that feeling very, very energized.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what experiment is, yeah, I can talk tonight, is what we in Wicca refer to as raising a cone of power.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I've seen this work.
Yeah.
I've seen amazing things done with this.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
in my own life and, you know, in the around the people around me.
Yes. Well, you know what I'm just trying to do is bringing science and therefore proof for Western mind to what are, in many cases, as you say, an ancient practice. You know, the Essenes did it, the Wiccas did it. Many, many traditional cultures have used intention healing circles. And as you say, they're almost like a vortex of power.
Let's go next to La Mesa, Texas. First-time caller, Lee's with us. Lee, thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Thanks for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
I enjoyed your lecture in Eureka Springs at the UFO conference this past summer.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Lynn, I had an experience. It's been 20 years ago, and I haven't told anybody about it. I thought they might think I was crazy, but I listened to your show tonight, and I have to talk to you about this.
Okay.
I was driving down the road one day, and what you're talking about tonight is something that I actually experienced while driving down the road. I was going to work, and all of a sudden, I wasn't in my car anymore. I was part of a large group of beings. I wasn't, you know, it was really weird. This group of beings had a group consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And this group was so powerful, I can't even begin to explain the power that was being thrown around. And the group wasn't even conscious of itself as individuals, although I was for some reason. And this group of beings numbered in the billions, and they were actually creating and destroying things in the universe, but they were also creating life, individual lives. Mm-hmm. They were causing deaths. They were causing rain. They were raising forests. They were destroying seas. Some of it was on a planetary scale. Some of it was on a cellular scale. Mm-hmm. It was insane, the power that this group had.
Yeah.
This lasted for a little while, and then all of a sudden I was back in my car, and I was about 30 miles down the road from where I had started.
So you had been driving all the time as having this amazing experience.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Well, you know, there's so many things.
And I thought I was losing my mind. I honestly did. But
yeah.
And I have looked for this experience again and again and tried to reconnect to this. I don't know what I experienced, but it was a group that was extremely powerful. And I'm just wondering, and my question to you is, do we as a human race, since we number in the billions, do we have an unconscious group intention as a human race that we're actually running this universe unconsciously?
Well, we are running. I mean, the short answer to you is, first of all, I can't pretend to say I give you any definitive answer for what happened to you, because that could have been that some sort of out of body experience where you maybe experienced the collective consciousness, where you just had this unbelievable, palpable sense of not only oneness, but of the power of what is going on with intention, or it could be some, you know, alien visitation or something. But the point is, you're not alone. Many, many millions of people have experiences like that. But the big question you asked, you know, are we collectively intending all the time? We're intending at every moment. You know, we're all leaky buckets. The science shows, as I say, we're beaming out a tiny current of light at every moment. And that means that we're affecting things and being affected at every moment. And the problem is, the big problem is, we're so unconscious of it. And my work's all about making people more conscious of their intentions so that they use that power wisely.
Lynn, when you talk about the power of eight, exactly what does that mean?
It means that power of small groups and how that power can be a real transformative power that heals the people themselves and their target. And that's the thing that I found amazing. The last intention experiment I ran, which was a healing intention experiment where we sent intention to an individual who was suffering from post-traumatic stress. He was an Afghanistan war veteran. There was some issue with the study design, so we can't really call it definitive.
in terms of what happened. We had a positive effect with him. But more importantly to me, what was really interesting was what was going on with the participants afterward. You know, almost half of our participants noted positive changes in their relationships with others. And a third were saying they felt more love for everyone they came into contact with. And they reported getting along better with clients, with ex-husbands, with siblings, with neighbors, even bosses. And it was just amazing. People who had fought forever for years were connecting, you know, brothers and sisters who didn't get along suddenly were, and mothers and daughters. You know, it was just incredible what was going on. So that's what I really mean about the power of eight, the power that this collective intention has to change us permanently.
All right, let's go now to John in Tennessee. John, thanks for calling. Go ahead. You're on Coast to Coast.
Hey, George. Hey, Lynn.
Hey.
Hi.
Hey, I wanted to tell you a very quick story, if you don't care, and I would like for you to verify it or de-verify it, if that's okay. I don't know a lot of particulars, so I'll try to hurry through it really fast. There was a guy that went overseas, evidently, and he noticed in this small Thai tribe that they would use apricot seeds. They would crush them and take oil, and the women would rub this oil on their face. And the juice from the apricots would actually make them look younger. And the men and the women both would actually eat the seeds. Well, he came up with a study, I guess, that the vitamin B17 that was in the apricots, there was never a reported sign of cancer in that tribe. Well, he brought it back to the United States, and he published it. And after he published it, they showed up to his house, and they put him in jail for it. And that publication never made it or something. And I don't know a lot of details about it, but I'm wondering if you've ever heard anything like that.
I haven't heard of that particular story, but there's a lot of good anecdotal evidence, and I believe some regular evidence for the B17, which is, as you say, in apricot seeds to treat cancer. And a lot of doctors I know who are using a variety of alternative approaches to heal cancer patients always suggest vitamin B17. The doctor who healed my mother-in-law, who treated over 4,000 cancer patients and didn't lose many of them, would usually suggest a multi-modality thing where, you know, of changing diet, supplements, high-dose intravenous stuff, plus looking for things like parasites, fixing your gut digestion, healing your emotional issues. So he was looking at that whole thing, but he would always suggest among the supplements B17.
You can get B17 too just by eating the apricot, can't you? Not just the seeds?
I think usually these guys talk about taking the supplement that's a real concentrated form from the seeds. You know, and it's always like, you know, when you're dealing with something like cancer, George, it's usually, you know, you want to take it in heroic doses, you know, big doses.
Was that Dr. Krebs, by the way, who did that?
You know, who did the study
the
of it?
Study on it.
I'm not really sure. 17. I don't remember. Krebs, I think that might have been it. Yeah.
Okay, we go next to Diane in Kent, Washington. Hi, Diane.
Hello. Hi, am I on?
You sure are.
Oh, okay. I turned my radio down, so I wasn't. I was trying to take notes, too, while you were talking. Okay, I'm sorry for your loss, and I'm praying for you. This is kind of a two-parter, and I'm not sure if it – I think you might have answered it. I don't know. Does the intention thought last? Like, I was thinking if we – I know on Friday we pray on this show or give good thoughts to people who need it and to lift those that are in grief or need depression and spiritual lifting. So will that intention for the listeners of this radio show praying for one another, will that last? Or like in Washington, D.C., your intention on crime, did it last, or was it for a short period and then did the crime increase again?
Well, we looked at it. I think it may be something that can last. We're still looking at that. But look, let's take Washington. We looked at it for an entire year. I know George kept saying to me, do you want to come back? Do you want to talk about it? And I said, not yet. I'm still looking at the data. You know, we sat patiently to wait for a year because we didn't want to just show what happened the next month. That doesn't really mean anything. It has to be a long-term trend. We had a long-term downward trend in violent crime in Washington, D.C. With Sri Lanka, we had a complete change in the course of the war that occurred over 8 months later. With Afghanistan, we had a long-term trend there, too, in those provinces. So maybe it lasts. It looks like it does. You know, I always am one of those people who's really cautious and want to say, I want to look some more at it. I want to, because I don't want to just say something off the top of my head. I want to actually provide some scientific evidence. And it looks like it seems to change things.
It's got a dramatic effect. The big question is how are we tapping into this wireless network out there in the universe, Lynn? How are we doing it?
You mean, what's the mechanism? How are we doing that?
Even with intention. How does intention kick that into high gear?
Well, I think it's the whole degree of focus. You know, when I studied Qigong masters, master healers, Buddhist monks, they got out of the way. All of them got out of their own, separate sense of separateness and ego. And by doing a lot of different kinds of techniques to get into that state of the collective, I have found working in a group, whether it's 8 or 4 million, once you just take a few deep breaths and start really focusing, you start changing your consciousness.
You do. Lynn, thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of the day out there in the United Kingdom. Lynn McTaggart, latest work is called The Bond. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Lottasaur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, George Knapp, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe.